Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, saging, or positive aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but we're moving on to something else, and I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today I'm interviewing Ashton Applewhite. Ashton, I've got your bio here. Ashton is an internationally recognized expert on ageism. She's the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. And it was just published this March. And she speaks widely at venues that have included the TED main stage, the United Nations, and is a leading spokesperson for a movement to mobilize against discrimination on the basis of age. Well, welcome to the series, Ashton.
Hi.
First of all, I have to tell you, here's how I discovered you. I have three grown sons, and they all know that I'm into this saging, aging stuff. And so the son in New York sent me this podcast, and I can't even tell you what it was on, I'm sure, but it was a podcast of you talking about your book. I listened to the podcast as I was walking, came home, bought the book on Amazon, read it, and then I've read several of your articles. So we definitely are aligned in our thinking, and I'm honored to be interviewing you today. So welcome to the series.
Well, thank you. Thank you for buying the book.
Yes, well, as I said, I read your book, I loved it, and I've read several of your articles. And one of the things that I will tell you that I really was impressed with your book, I mean, I come out of higher education, and so I was very impressed with the extensive research and the resources that you integrated into the book. Some people in this field, it's a little light. And you back up, you back up what you say with sources, and you are also a very good storyteller. So the examples that you give, and actually I'm going to share a story from your book, but later in the interview.
I appreciate that. I feel like people see the word manifesto and they're like, oh God, this is going to be, you know, all fiber and no fun. And I promise it's not all fiber.
No. And it definitely is fun, but it's definitely right on, because one of the things, the first step, I'm certified as a saging leader through Saging International, SAGE-ING. And the first step, we say people have to push back on what society tells us about aging. And that's really, we're going to talk more about that here in the interview. So explain to listeners what you mean by manifesto against ageism.
Well, ageism is discrimination and stereotyping on the basis of age. We are being ageist, which we all are all the time, including me, you know, because we're all prejudiced. So the very first step, I would say, is to become aware of our bias. That's the uncomfortable part. Mm-hmm. We are being ageist anytime we make an assumption about a person or a group of people based on how old we think they are. So a manifesto is a call for social change to, first of all, look at our own attitudes towards age and aging, the way your saging, fellows urge us to do, because we can't challenge bias unless we're aware of it. And that is uncomfortable because it's really hard to unlearn things we have not, you know, we haven't thought about, thought to challenge all life long. The wonderful part is that once you see it in yourself, you start to see it in the world around you. And that that process is called, here's a geeky phrase for you, cognitive liberation. And it is liberating. So a manifesto is a call for social change. My book asks everyone who wakes up a day older and who might be a little uncertain or uneasy about that prospect, which I think we all are, unless you're very young. If you're very young, it's hard to imagine getting old. You know, it just is. But you know, some people are born what I call old people in training, you know, and this process can occur at any time. And the earlier we start on it, the better, because we realize then how much our ideas about old age are way off base and way too negative. And then you start to see it around you. It through consciousness raising, really, or reading my book or talking to friends or all of the above, What consciousness raising did in the women's movement was brought women together, they compared notes, and they realized that things they had been thinking of as personal problems, you know, I can't get a job, my boss keeps patting me on the butt, you know, my boobs aren't big enough, so I can't, you know, whatever it happens to be, you know, can't be validated in the eyes of the world. These are not personal problems. These are widely shared political problems that require collective action. Mm-hmm. And once we see that, that's the cognitive liberation bit, we realize we can come together and do something about it. And that is what the book urges us to do, because, boy, it feels so much better to be on the other side. For a long time, in the beginning, I was like, I know I'm onto something. I don't know. You know, took me years to find my voice. And I thought, if all I get out of this is that I feel so much better about my own later years, that's a lock. You know, it might have to be enough, but that's a lock.
Well, I totally agree with you, because I say in workshops, this work has changed my life and how I look at life.
I'm happy to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah. And so I definitely, and I teach for years, I taught undergraduates, and I would weave what I was learning into my leadership and organizational behavior courses, and they loved it. And so I agree with you, the earlier people figure this out, the better.
Right. I mean, it's not that our fears about late life are not real or mm-hmm. legitimate. You know, we're all worried about ending up, you know, alone maybe, or running out of money. You know, we have different fears, and it's not that those fears are not legitimate and real. It's that they're way out of proportion mm-hmm. to the reality. Just like some part of your body is going to fall apart, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, some people you have known all your life are going to die, but you know, some of them will outlive you. You know, it's always both. It's both. And it's not this catastrophic landscape of loss and deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there are also gains.
Exactly. One of the concepts that I had heard before, so I know it's research-based, but I should pursue it more. But explain the U curve of happiness, and yeah, explain that, because I think that really people need to know that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I started writing about this in my mid 50s, which is I'm going to be how old? 67. Next, that's not because I'm anxious about telling my age. It's because I can't count. Over a decade ago, because I was worried about getting old, and I started researching longevity, because I do my research. Thanks for acknowledging that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I bumped into instantly was this thing called the U curve of happiness, which shows that people everywhere in the world are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of our lives. And I thought, gee, you know, they must have cornered 2 80-year-olds and given them a cookie and said, how are you feeling? And then I thought, well, that must be true if you're healthy. Well, that must be true if you're wealthy. Well, that must be true if you are married, you know, have a partner. No, no, no. The curve obtains in every culture, independent of socioeconomic status, independent of marital status. It is a function of the way aging itself affects the brain. And I think about, wow, if we can become that much happier in late life, imagine what that curve would look like if we beat back these voices individually and collectively that say, do age is to fail, old equals ugly, you know, it's all going to be awful, because that's the prevailing narrative. If that curve can be that strong in the absence of a positive aging narrative, imagine the change we could affect.
Exactly. No, that's definitely true. And I think people need to hear that. Well, as I said, I just loved your book. And so in terms of getting I don't know what I call a sneak peek at the book, or your top 10 things to remember, but from your book, what are the main points that you think people need to know about ageism? And it could be anything. It could be things that you discovered, or I am going to ask you later about action. So, but it could just maybe ahas to you, or just, you know, main
things.
Well,
I would say, you know, the single most important thing is to look at your own attitudes mm-hmm. towards age and aging. You know, if your back hurts, does it hurt because you're whatever age you are, or does it hurt because you helped somebody move or lifted a bunch of heavy stuff or made a meal for a bunch of people. It's a classic line. I didn't make it up, but I use it in my TED talk. I stopped blaming my sore knee on being 65 because my other knee doesn't hurt and it's just as old.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say self-deprecating things? Do you use the phrase senior moment? I used to. I thought it was kind of self-deprecatingly cute. But any prediction about impairment, especially cognitive, it reinforces that the false idea that because you are age X, system Y is going to give out on you. And those things become self-fulfilling prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
There is tons of fascinating research, really good research, that shows how attitudes towards aging affect how our minds and bodies function at the cellular level. People with more realistic attitudes towards aging. I don't say positive attitudes anymore, right? It's just if you know the facts, because this is not some happy talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
People with more realistic attitudes towards aging walk faster. They heal quicker, even from severe disability. That's a study from the Journal of the American Medical Association. And scientists do not make those kind of causal statements unless they are damn sure they have their facts.
Mm-hmm.
They live longer. An average of 7.5 years longer. And the latest study out of Yale University shows that they are less likely to develop dementia, even if they have the gene that predisposes them to the disease.
That's fascinating.
So check your own age bias.
Right.
How do you use the words old and young?
Yes.
I hear people say, I don't feel old all the time, What they really mean, I think, is that they don't feel useless or they don't feel ugly or, they don't feel irrelevant. Use those words.
Mm-hmm.
And because we can feel those things at 13, I certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, I feel so young, how about I feel sexy? I feel energetic. I feel whatever. And don't try to break the habit, which we all have, no judgment, of using old for insert bad thing and young meaning insert positive thing.
No, I have to agree. I mean, when I was reading your book, and actually I was reviewing it again last night, knowing that I was going to talk with you, and I find this section, very valuable because, I find myself falling, I'm guilty of making some of these mistakes, even though I'm in this work. So we just have to look at ourselves, yes.
Listen, we older people, I don't know how old you are,
mm-hmm.
but we are, this was another surprise to me. We are often the most ageist of all because we have had a lifetime of internalizing these messages and we've simply never thought to challenge them.
Mm-hmm.
I use a metaphor that you can tie a baby elephant up with a clothesline and that same clothesline will do the job when the elephant is fully grown. Right, because it learned early on that it was tethered. And when we start conforming to these stereotypes about how older people are less capable, less X, less Y, we collude in our own invisibility and disempowerment because we've never pulled on the rope and said, wait a minute, our behavior, our attitudes are based on information that doesn't really describe the way we feel or act or are.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, I want to kind of follow that with language is powerful. And people in this field struggle with what to call ourselves because, I'm a boomer too. So many, many boomers don't like the term elder, which is why Elder Hostel is now called Rhodes Scholar. And I like the term older, olders.
You.
And then you have a term older in training. talk more about these terms.
Thank you. I like to say that I have only solved two problems. I've solved what to say when someone says you look good for your age, and I have solved the what to call old people problem. What to say when you look good for your age is, thank you. No, sorry. Ooh, I can't believe I said that. Is to avoid the habit of saying thank you, which is a hard habit to break, as we just saw, is to say you look good for your age too. In a neutral tone. And then the person has to think about why what they intended as a compliment doesn't feel like a compliment. And that's how we change the culture. I I came up with olders and youngers as nouns when I was writing my book and got tired of typing older people or older Americans. It works for a number of reasons. A lot of us don't want to identify as old, but we will readily admit to being older, mm-hmm. right? Especially if you have more road, you know, behind you than ahead. Mm-hmm. It emphasizes that age is a spectrum. So it gets us over this crippling old-young boundary. Everyone is terrified of being on the wrong side of that velvet rope when you wake up and everything falls apart and life is awful, which of course does not exist, but that imaginary divide segregates us and fills us with needless dread. I like it because it's value neutral. I don't think older people are more valuable than younger people, so I don't love elder or senior, although, you know, no judgment against people who use those words. A lot of indigenous cultures use mm-hmm. elders, more mm-hmm. power to them. It's not part of my culture. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I like it because you can be an older and a younger at once. We are always older than some people and younger than others. A four-year-old will assure you that she is older than that three-year-old in the corner, right? So it just emphasizes that when it comes to age, we are always in relation to others along this journey. I like that. And the other phrase I use is old person in training, which is a phrase that I saw a geriatrician named Joanne Lynn use. And I thought this was in the early days when I was super miserable and, you know, unsure of my path. But I thought, gee, I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but that is what I have become. And we've circled back to this idea that the younger you are, when you realize that your fears and apprehensions about getting older are out of proportion to the reality and are fed by social and economic forces mm-hmm. outside yourself, the earlier you get that memo, the better, because we waste so much of our youth worrying, needlessly worrying about getting old. So becoming an old person in training is just that. Imagining, acknowledging that someday you will be older, and forging an imaginative connection to your older self. It's that simple, because all prejudice takes root in othering, seeing a group of people as other mm-hmm. than ourselves, other religion, other color, other sports team. The weird thing about ageism is that that other is our own future older self. Ageism takes root in denial of the fact that we're going to get old, even though it's clearly irrational, you know, makes no sense, but no prejudice makes sense. When you become an old person in training, you just acknowledge, you know, someday I'm going to become that older me. So you don't get on that hamster wheel of denial, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And get into, you know, start digging that hole deep of pretending it's never going to happen and buying into, you know, anti-aging rhetoric and buying products you don't need. Mm-hmm. And when you're young, it's really hard to imagine getting old. I don't think that's ageism. I think it's human. Mm-hmm. But if you older people around you, and making note of things they do that you think are great, things they do you think are really not so smart. And, you know, and perhaps also starting to, you know, prepare for, or, you know, think about the logistical, the emotional, the social supports and connections we all want to have throughout life, but perhaps some especially in late life.
Right. Well, you know, I'd say ageism is like an equal opportunity. You know, or aging is an equal opportunity, you know.
And ageism, I'm glad for that slight slip of the tongue, because I think it's important to point out that ageism affects young people too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is any judgment on the basis of age. If when someone walks into an office and says, how could I possibly take direction from a manager who's my kid's age? You know, that's what people said. That's what men said, you know, 40 years ago. How could I possibly work for a woman?
Right.
You know, and of course, and I'm not saying those transitions are easy. I'm not saying we don't all have those knee-jerk reactions, but we learn, we adapt, right?
Right. And so we need
young
to be
people experience a lot of age bias too. But I'd like to say in that context, do not fall for old versus young framing.
Right. No, I like that.
You know, that, right, that old people take jobs away from younger ones, that old people don't care about the world we leave behind to younger people. None of that is true. I mean, any statement is true of a certain minority of the, but how can anything be true of all young people or all boomers or
sure.
all older people? Obviously, right? And we need to come together across all ages for whatever things important to us, whether it's an election or getting a park made or getting a project done, whatever it happens to be. We need old and young at the table, just like we need straight and gay and black and white and so on.
Totally. I totally agree with you. Well, you know, it's interesting. You talk a lot about wanting to create a movement, or you are, you know, kind of similar to the equal rights, women's rights, and even, you know, you use this term occupy age. And in fact, what I'd like to do right now, because I really love how you are embracing aging. And so I want to read just a short passage from page 223 in your book. It's chapter 9, called Occupy Age Beyond Ageism. A few years ago, an email landed in my inbox titled The Aging Party. It read, I am aging. On April 29th, I will celebrate 34 years of aging. Please save the date. I would love to see you, celebrate with you, hug you, and toast with you. If you are partial to aging, come to the aging party. I mean, I just love that.
My friend Masha.
Yeah, I just think it's absolutely fabulous. And, you know, I wrote an article last year for Training Magazine called What's Age Got to Do with It? Unconscious Bias.
Yeah. You know?
And
I think the punchline for that is that the woman who sent out that invitation was going to be, what was it, 34?
34, yeah.
34, you know, and we don't expect people to use that language at all, especially someone that young who is either, you know, not thinking about aging or considers herself young. We don't want to think about it. It was scary. And so I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, you have numerous action ideas of, you know, how to kind of be, create this movement or join this movement. You've shared some of them. You know, definitely it starts with self. But in addition to that, what are some of your favorites? Because you really, honestly, you have pages. So just what would be some of your favorites off the top of your head in terms of what our listeners, you know, could or should do?
Well, I would say that the very next step is to start a consciousness-raising group around age bias. If you go to my website, which is thischairrocks.com, there's a link for resources, and there's a guide, free download, called Who Me, Ageist, How to Start a Consciousness-Raising Group. Because, as I already mentioned, consciousness-raising is the tool that catalyzed the women's movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, another really nifty thing to do is to read my book. That's not free, obviously. But, you know, every smart thing I've thought of is in that book, and mm-hmm. it's fun to read, and it is a fantastic reading group book. And there's also a reading group guide to it done by, cooked up by some gerontologists at Ithaca College, although it's not too wonky to be for the general reader. Another thing that I have done with two colleagues in the last year is to create a clearinghouse of free vetted anti-ageism resources, called Old School, oldschool.info. And again, if you go to my website, thischairrocks.com, and click on the resources button, which is right up front, you mm-hmm. will see a link to Old School, or you can go there directly. So there are over 100 tools, books, the books are the only thing that costs money, workshops, videos for very specific resources that can help you think differently, help you in your workforce. A super easy thing to do is to also to circulate my TED Talk. It's free. It's right up there on my website, mm-hmm. or you can go to TED and search for my funny name. It's an 11-minute talk. I got to say, I really nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an introduction to what ageism is and why it's not just important personally to mobilize against it, but why it is a global human rights issue. And I will say that having just crisscrossed the country on a book tour and done one in London, the movement really is happening. The conversation is happening everywhere. Since we started Old School last August, we've added a new section on campaigns, which is a list of anti-ageism campaigns happening in Australia, the World Health Organization, across Europe, and here in the U.S., of people who are realizing, gee, how are we going to make the most of longer lives? We can't do it unless we challenge ageism at the personal and the institutional level, because it affects all of us, and it affects every arena, business, the workforce, healthcare, you name it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely true. And I will say your website is just honestly very well organized and full of free resources. So thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. And I also should mention this, chairrocks.com/blog. I have been thinking out loud about this for over 10 years. So all that stuff is available, searchable by topic. If you're interested in some aspect of it, you can probably find something I've written about it.
Yeah, no, it's excellent. Well, our time is coming to an end, Ashton, I'm sorry. And
that's
what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know about this topic?
Oh, I think you did good. I mean, you know your listeners better.
Uh-huh.
I like to point out that aging is not just something annoying that, boomers and parents and celebrities do. It is a process upon which we embark the day we're born.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would love to have more voices countering this narrative around the presidential election that someone could be too old to be president, or because it's not whether you're too old. Age is not the point. Your point is ideology and capacity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to beat back the idea that there's not enough to go round for older people and younger people, the issue is the way resources are distributed.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is inequality,
mm-hmm.
right? I am very active on Twitter, at This Chair Rocks, and I have a This Chair Rocks Facebook page where I try and put, put good articles about ageism. So really, inform yourself and become a voice yourself, because a movement needs a million voices. Your take on things are going to be different from mine. I do not have a particularly spiritual or personal growth oriented approach. I'm sort of wonky and thinky, but we need voices like all the saging people. We need a million voices, because aging is, it's such a heterogeneous process. We each learn and grow and fail to learn and grow in our own ways.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, honestly, Ashton, you've given us so much to think about, and I cannot thank you enough. The emphasis in this series is on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life, and I think anyone who reads your book will be inspired to do so. Particularly, I will just share, I think your chapter on sex and intimacy is very much needed, okay? So anyway,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the best to you.
My pleasure, Jen. Keep up your own good work.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.